I'm Melton Thornaby. It is now 7 weeks since I was abducted by aliens. I am still on board their vessel, and to describe it is like describing silence, possible in words but inaccurate in feeling. The corridors stretch, narrow, then suddenly widen into atriums where the air seems to sag. Imagine a cathedral constructed entirely of bone, bleached not white, but to a shade I can only call unsympathetic. There are no angles, only curves, as though the ship were designed by water. Doors do not open. They simply cease to be closed, like eyelids lifting. Sometimes I glimpse enormous chandeliers suspended from the ceilings, until one of them blinks and I realize it is not a chandelier at all, but an organ. There is no rumble of engines, no vibration, no sense of propulsion. I asked once how the ship moves. The parish told me it doesn't. The ship is still, and instead it is the universe that shifts around us, a rearrangement of everything else to preserve the convenience of their voyage. I cannot confirm this, of course, though I admit there is something comforting in the thought that motion itself has been outsourced, and that we float not through space, but through surrender.
Incoming news transmission from Earth. Amazon has begun delivering packages before they are ordered. Customers report finding boxes outside their doors with notes reading, "You'll want this soon." Items range from useful to bewildering. One recipient found a single pair of pants, another a taxidermied raccoon holding a tiny pair of headphones. Attempts to track the shipments have failed. Delivery drones report feeling hesitant and refuse to answer questions. Economists warn of temporal inflation, suggesting that supply may now precede demand indefinitely. Customers have reported mild paranoia, particularly around online browsing, worried that their next thought might trigger a delivery.
I shall now read the minutes of the last meeting. Item 1. The night porter reported a new moon orbiting the hotel. This moon is green, smaller than a fist, and appears to occasionally drift in and out of the guest lounge via the lobby. We plan to welcome it politely. Item 2. A debate was held on the concept of time. Consensus was reached that it is less a line and more a damp corridor. The clocks in the boardroom took offense and began striking loudly at random. Item 3. The character of Bernard returned briefly from season 1. Then vanished almost immediately and was archived.
Time for Relativity Speaking with me, Fiona Bruce. Today I'll explore E equals mc squared, also known as mass to energy equivalence. Imagine a cosmic vending machine. You insert a chunk of lead, press a button, and poof, it becomes pure energy, like the leftover caffeine in your soul after orbiting a black hole without sleep. The universe, as always, is pedantic and slightly sinister. One miscalculation and you could vaporize a small moon. Yet, somewhere in the void, a photon chuckles. It's the ultimate cosmic exchange, matter for energy, snacks for annihilation, your existential dread for the joy of understanding. So next time someone says, "Can mass really become energy?" you smile politely, nod, and quietly wonder if your leftover lunch is secretly plotting to explode. That is the law of the universe. That is relativity. And that is quite terrifyingly delicious physics. I need a drink.
Handed into the lost and found desk today, a glass sphere the size of a grapefruit, containing what appears to be a single eyelid, suspended and blinking at a perfectly average human rate, once every 4 seconds. It was discovered in the corridor outside the snooker room, wedged neatly between two leather sofas. When questioned, the sphere refused to fog, smudge, or crack under pressure, as though the laws of physics had been instructed not to interfere. Maintenance staff claim the eyelid looks uncannily familiar, though none can agree on whose it resembles or why it seems to track them even when they look away. Passengers are reminded not to insert personal items into the sphere, nor to apologize to it, however strong the urge may be.
Houston, we have a problem. I have filled my nappy again. I have filled my nappy again. Over.
Ground floor. Magnetic spoons. Bubble wrap wallpaper. And neon shoelaces. First floor. Solar-powered bookmarks, backward clocks, and chocolate-scented notebooks. Second floor. Floating bookshelves, hammocks for cats, and glitter-infused toothpaste. Third floor. Angela Lansbury.
Here is today's mission update. Moth Hotel has entered a region of space with no measurable starlight, though the windows insist on showing us pleasant countryside scenes. Do not be fooled. The sheep grazing in the distance have been dead for centuries. The water purification unit is now producing a faint lavender aroma. It is technically drinkable, though medical has asked we refrain from commenting on the aftertaste as the water becomes defensive. Communications received an unscheduled broadcast earlier. It was only three words. Closer than before. It repeated until someone shut it off, though no one can agree who that someone was. And yes, the search for Melton Thornaby continues. Yesterday, we thought we saw him in the observation lounge, staring wistfully at the void. We called his name, but the lounge was empty, except for an unfinished glass of Merlot. That concludes today's update. Please remember, if the stars appear to wink at you, do not wink back. They take it personally.
Turn left in 4.1 light years, then glide past the glittering fields of mild alarm, where starlight seems slightly anxious about its own existence. Turn left and decelerate near planet Tepid Pond, whose aquatic inhabitants, if you can call them that, will watch your ship with polite indifference. At 0.7 parsecs, sidestep Xylophonia Major, which vibrates gently, but only when unobserved. Curve around the crescent of forgetful shadows. Here, echoes of missed appointments drift like cosmic dust. Reduce speed further to slip through the belt of faintly regrettable decisions, each asteroid spinning lazily and whispering half-forgotten promises. Approach the dark doldrum moon, whose surface radiates with quiet melancholy, and the faint scent of old libraries. Align with the comet of satisfaction, which orbits with ceremonious elegance, almost but not quite achieving contentment. Prepare for final drift toward the space station of surprising stillness. You have arrived at your destination.
I cannot stop dreaming about the moon. Last night I was with Buzz Aldrin. I am always with Buzz Aldrin in the moon dreams. We descended into a crater filled with fog that smelled faintly of metal and smoke. From the mist, figures emerged, astronauts long dead, moving in slow motion. Each carried a lantern, glowing with a pale green light, and each whispered fragments of sentences we had forgotten in our waking lives. We tried to respond, but our voices came out as a series of tiny sparks, flickering and dying before meaning could form. The crater's edges began to tilt like a collapsing stage set, and we realized that the moon was a theater, and that we had wandered in during a rehearsal, uninvited. Then suddenly, Buzz was naked, and beckoning for me to come to him. We danced and danced, and then Buzz touched himself in a special way. I awoke with a single tear in my eye.
Moth Hotel trading cards are now available to collect. Card number one is the reception desk, a vast slab of black marble salvaged from a nameless asteroid. It reflects nothing, not even the receptionist. Guests frequently approach, hoping to check in, only to find themselves filling out paperwork that seems to have already been completed in their own handwriting. The bell, meant to summon staff, rings only once, no matter how many times it's struck. Sometimes it rings before a hand touches it. A faint humming emerges from the drawers at night, accompanied by the smell of warm dust. Official records state the desk has never moved, though several witnesses claim to have seen it shift an inch closer when no one was looking. The staff assure us that it is entirely safe, which is precisely what unsettles collectors. This card is traded carefully, as too much direct gaze at its illustration has been known to bring on migraines or distant memories of forgotten arrivals.
You're listening to Moth FM 96.8. At 6 p.m., it's Moth Supper with Green Tomato Lee, followed at 8 p.m. by the evening show with Kal-El Coppola Cage Fight. Stay awake for Moth After Dark at 10 p.m. with Jeremy Clapham Common, and then glide smoothly into the midnight show with me, Tiger Lily Dressed Lobster. The Moth News and Moth Weather will be here every hour from the Moth Newsroom with Trouser Blanket Swift. That's Tuesday evening, only on Moth FM, where the wings beat 24/7.
While Moth Hotel is in transit, we have devised various leisure activities for the guests and residents to help pass the time. Today's competition is the magnetic climb. A section of the exterior wall of Moth Hotel has been fitted with steel rungs leading up 3 floors, and each participant is issued with a spacesuit and a pair of heavy magnetic gloves and boots. The task: ascend as quickly as possible without losing grip and floating off into space. It sounds simple. It is not. The magnets adhere strongly, requiring considerable effort to detach each step. Momentum cannot be relied upon. Every movement must be deliberate, pried free from the metal surface, like pulling yourself from tar. Muscles burn quickly. Competitors adopt different strategies. Some move smoothly and steadily, prying each hand loose in turn. Others use bursts of power, yanking themselves upward in jerky leaps. Few make it without blistered hands and at least one bruised shin. The spectators view from below, craning upwards as climbers grunt and sweat in the oppressive vacuum. The winner is awarded with a boots voucher and a year's subscription to the Radio Times.
We just encountered a planet whose continents resemble enormous fingerprints pressed into blue clay. Each ridge of land spirals inward to a central depression where an inland sea rests, placid and suspiciously still. The oceans are shallow, no more than 20 meters deep, yet they contain shadows far deeper than their waters allow, and probably the ugliest fish in the universe. The air is crisp, with a faint scent of rust and overripe pears. Breathing it induces vivid déjà vu. Staff members reported remembering events from their childhood that, upon later investigation, never happened. One claimed to recall his own funeral, and he found the details oddly tasteful. The population consists of tall insectoid creatures who wear oversized underpants stitched from molted skin. They do not engage with us directly, but when viewed peripherally, they appear to mimic our gestures with unnerving precision, as though rehearsing. Recommendation: mark this world as unsettlingly courteous.
We have a new piece of technology aboard the Moth Hotel. It was installed without warning, which is customary. Yesterday, the central corridor simply bent in a way it hadn't before, and there it was, the prognostic exhaust ventilator. Officially, its purpose is to release the accumulated future from the ship's engines. Apparently, when a vessel like ours travels long enough between stars, fragments of tomorrow build up in the ducts. Left unvented, they cause turbulence, or worse, déjà vu in the navigation system. The ventilator works by inhaling these temporal residues and exhaling them as a fine mist into the void. The mist resembles smoke, though it smells faintly of cheese. Science, we're told, is simple. Time is particulate, and the ship, like a sieve, catches more of it than is polite. The staff at Moth Hotel have been advised not to stand too close during discharge. Exposure can leave one with knowledge of conversations not yet spoken, or scars from accidents not yet endured. Nevertheless, several staff have been seen loitering near the device, waiting for a hiss of prophecy, as though proximity to the future might make their present more bearable.
Please comply with the following instructions to exit this podcast. Key your exit code very carefully. Your code is 98z3(0-N)(5)5. @andymurray with a small A and a large M. Please remember to water the umbrella plant on the way out.
Ah, Moth Hotel was written and produced by Brian Luff. Music by Kevin MacLeod. Voice technology by 11 Labs. All celebrity voices were impersonated. Moth Hotel was a Sowerby and Luff production for Studio Senseless.
All complaints, confessions, and contributions should be emailed to mothhotel@studiosenseless.com.